Elvis performed here, 1953.
Wow.
Just not just some funky neighborhood club. Wait, man, let me get my thing going on.
Mitch Landrieu just performed here.
That's right, I sure did.
Welcome to Hernando's Hideaway in Memphis, Tennessee, one of the most historic music venues in town.
Tennessee is like this hallmark of American culture, but Memphis was Elvis's town. Do you remember the column, Elvis is the last thing we will all agree upon?
That might be true.
It did foretell how divisions were going to arise in America.
Mitch and I are here in a state that has seen quite a bit of transformation over the years.
There's no Erin this week, which is sad.
I miss her.
It's particularly sad, though, because this state, Tennessee, was the state that ratified the 19th Amendment. And of course, she writes for the 19th. It's a way to honor Erin and the 19th, even though she's not here. But she'll be back next week. I'm old enough to remember when Tennessee was a swing state.
You know, people forget this, but Al Gore,
yeah,
Democratic Vice President of the United States, he was from here.
The state went for Clinton in 92 and 96, and that is the last time it ever voted for a Democrat, including when Al Gore ran in 2000.
Yep.
And it wasn't that long ago, the Republicans took over the state, right? This is the gold standard for what Republicans who are
correct
trying to harness control have done. They control the governorship, the state legislature, they have a supermajority, every statewide elected office.
The Senate, every statewide elected office, and figuratively the Supreme Court.
Both United States senators.
Correct.
They have 9 congressional seats. There's 1 Democrat remaining.
Immediately after Calais was decided, the governor called the legislature in a special session, and in lightning speed, they actually eviscerated the last Democratic district and split Memphis into 3 separate districts.
That was the last remaining Democratic district.
And so it was really intentional, and it was designed to make it impossible for there to be a black congressional district in Tennessee.
The changes have left a lot of voters wondering whether their voices still count. But what happens when one party rules and keeps reshaping the rules of democracy? This is Long Play, Episode 4, Tennessee.
The majority party has the right to change the lines of the district. Normally, they do it earlier in the process. So I think the lateness of it has led to confusion.
We have people come up here like, well, I'm in this district, so who is this? The people that they voted for before, they can no longer vote for because they're not in the district. If you look at the map, it's screwed up.
It has become a labyrinth, unfortunately. We should not have to deal with labyrinth situations when we're just trying to vote.
Mitch went to talk to Pastor Lawrence Turner. He has 2 churches in Memphis, less than 2 miles apart, that are now split into 2 separate congressional districts.
You said that Memphis has become, and I'll quote you, a political pawn for a national agenda.
State lawmakers here in Tennessee, they wanted to give a entirely Republican congressional delegation to Washington, D.C.
Right.
Whenever you have one party who rules everything, and they're moving in a way that they don't want to hear what any other side has to say, that's not American.
You said what stings you most about redistricting is a feeling that the country has really kind of lost ground on the modern civil rights movement.
When you think about voting rights in particular, one of the greatest victories of the modern civil rights movement is the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So when these kinds of things are dismantled, and you have people dare to celebrate the memory of Martin Luther King Jr., I think what many people want to do and what this current administration is seeking to do is to ignore some of the darker chapters of America's history in favor of a preferred history for a certain set of people in this country.
Black elected officials' districts are going to get eviscerated on the state level and on the local level, school boards as well. And the consequence of that is going to be...
You're going to have some people who've been skeptical about the political process in this country just completely opt out. But I've seen more energy since Calais. This has galvanized our community. The work that I've done along with my organization, the Black Clergy Collaborative of Memphis, focused in on educating voters and turning voters out to participate in elections. We've had a major push for early voting. Why is that important? In Tennessee, during early voting, you can vote in any precinct.
Which gives people a greater opportunity to vote.
Exactly.
What gives you hope about Tennessee?
If we can persevere through this season, that the darkness will be able to push back ultimately, so that we leave a legacy for future generations to embrace a better Tennessee.
Well, you know what's interesting is this young man, Justin Pearson.
He was baptized in that baptistry.
Was he really?
Yes.
Most folks know me, I like to talk a lot about we the people. Some famous words. But I've been playing with this other one called E Pluribus Unum. And it's out of many, one. These were part of the founding ideals of our country. They wrote the words, I did, E Pluribus Unum.
That's Justin Pearson speaking at a voting rights event near downtown Memphis. He's a Democratic state legislator and just 31 years old. This year, he's running for Congress in one of the three new split districts in Memphis. Mitch and I discussed more about his story.
People will remember, in 2023, there was a mass shooting at the Covenant School.
It was so devastating for Tennessee. A lot of protests happening at the state legislature.
Justin and a couple of other people were trying to dissent.
For those who try to separate, to divide and conquer, to silence, to make us capitulate, it's time for us to punch back.
He got expelled from the legislature by his colleagues.
And I believe our punch of love, our punch of joy is stronger than anything that they got.
That thing really got heated.
Are you ready to punch back?
It was a very, very difficult time.
Let's fight and let's win together. I love you.
Mitch sat down with Pearson to talk about that fight and his strategy for change.
My first official day as a state representative is the same day of the Covenant School shooting. 7,000 people were at the Capitol under the age of 18 saying, do something. And we were told, in essence, just ignore that, pretend it isn't happening, and keep business as usual. Thursday, we protest in the well of the House floor. Monday, we have a resolution saying to expel me from my seat.
You actually did not get expelled. So we jump forward now to the Calais decision.
Yeah. The day after the Calais decision, U.S. Senator Marsha Blackburn says we need to take Memphis. The day after that, the President of the United States calls the governor, and that following Tuesday, we were back in Nashville to break our district into thirds.
Chaos at the Tennessee Capitol in Nashville Thursday as Democratic lawmakers and protesters tried to stop legislation breaking up the state's only Democratic House seat.
They kicked you out of the chamber.
That's right.
And then they said you couldn't be on any committees.
That's right. Fortunately, we're out of session. But if any of those committees were called back in, we wouldn't, as Democrats, have a seat.
So that essentially means you can't represent your constituents' interests.
That's right.
Would it have been strategically better for you to not be so disruptive so that you could stay in the fight?
Other people are trying it the other way. They're being silent. They're not being disruptive. I'm speaking up for communities that have been ignored. I am elevating the issues of poor communities, of marginalized communities, of my district. What we're seeing is the rise of the neo-Confederacy. They are using the institutions of the country to create separation and to reinforce the caste system. The hate that created the KKK in Pulaski, Tennessee, 161
years ago. Which happens to be
ago.
In the congressional district that they didn't want you to run in.
Exactly.
You actually went to this county.
Oh, absolutely.
And Giles people
county.
Showed up.
150 people showed
wow.
up. What we are thinking about is how we build a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-socioeconomic, intergenerational movement to win. And what I have found is in the farmer in Savannah, Tennessee, who's millions of dollars in debt, are struggling just as much as the lady who's in Pulaski who had to move out of her $800 apartment. The same systems are hurting all of us.
Activists in Memphis agree. It's about getting people to see what's happening.
I am certain that this is an important moment in history, and how we respond to this moment will matter when it becomes very clear to the naked eye, to everyday people, and you watch them join the movement, you feel empowered.
Do you feel like you're going to be in this fight for a long time?
I do. I feel committed. Memphis has such a rich history of civil rights and fighters. We have to continue that legacy. We can make history and we can make positive change.
We're being intentional about using joy as a tool and an act of resistance and to try to uplift people to get out the vote, to be encouraged during these harsh times.
We know that they won't stop until they dilute as much of our voice as possible. But we're not going to stop resisting. We understand the power that we build and the power that is in people power.
The Republican power grab has been so complete. There can be one party control. And then what does it do to your state?
So it appears in Tennessee, this state's being very aggressive about the state now using their power to preempt the rights of major cities. So in Nashville, for example, the state's trying to take control of Nashville's airport, which is a massive asset.
And the city's mayor, Freddie O'Connell, has sued twice. A pretty popular mayor in Nashville, but he's struggling with state takeover.
I'd be really interested to see how he navigates the cultural issues and the economic issues and the fight that he's having with the state.
I headed over to Nashville to talk to Mayor Freddie O'Connell about leading a blue city in a very big red state.
So is Nashville America's fastest growing city?
From 2020 to 2025, our downtown added more residents than any place in America, including places like downtown Brooklyn.
And just one of America's most important cities now.
Yeah, we're growing. We're demonstrating safer streets, better schools, all the things. So Nashville, doing great.
Yeah.
And then we have to contend with the fact that we're in this deeply Republican state environment.
I don't think that people understand what's happening. What's happened here?
Just extraordinary change in the political landscape ever since the supermajority. It almost seems like the House wants to all be city managers. They tried a few years ago to take over the Sports Authority. They have partially taken over our local electric utility. We're in court again on the airport. And it's this strange dynamic because it's not like we're going around producing bad results.
Why do you think the Republicans are putting you in the eye of the storm here? Republicans in Congress have claimed to have initiated investigations of you after an ICE raid. You have, you know, Marsha Blackburn, who likes to fight with you on social media.
She likes to throw punches. I don't have to step into the ring, right? I mean, it's the national Republican strategy right now is to attack cities. Cities are where Democrats hold power and where we're demonstrating public policy outcomes that they can't repeat. You know, basically, if a Democratic city is becoming too successful, they can come put the cram down on.
There are a lot of people that protest in Nashville. They are not able to elect Democrats statewide, but there is a culture of pushback and resistance in Tennessee. People like Justin Canoe are feeling the need to speak out. Justin is the founder of the Tennessee Holler, an independent progressive media outlet focused on politics. I met up with him to learn more.
2016, we moved here. A guy named Trump won, and that kind of radicalized me, and I started getting into politics.
Were you not into politics?
I was not into politics at all.
Oh, really?
No. I was in, like, the entertainment world. There's a thing called the Tennessee Star here in Tennessee, which is kind of like Tennessee's Breitbart. And there really wasn't that to balance it out on what I would consider the truthful side of things. So in 2019, we started the Holler. Our motto is always yell the truth.
That's a lot of that.
That's what we do. I don't like lying. I don't like corruption. I don't think that's partisan. I think that should be a bipartisan thing. And here, it's so much of one-party control. They just think they can get away with anything. They tell this story about, you know, how we're this low-tax state and, you know, fiscally responsible. But what they don't talk about is that we're at the bottom in infant maternal mortality. We're at the bottom in poverty. We're at the bottom in violent crime. There's obviously ramifications of what's going on around here.
It's like one-party control, total lockdown, Republican power here.
Yep.
And what are they choosing to do with it?
For some reason, they see this as the tip of the spear of this culture war that we're in. Mm-hmm. The drag ban, you know, vouchers. A lot of these things have come to Tennessee and then they expand to the rest of the country. You know, and I think a big part of that, we have the highest percentage of evangelicals in the entire country. It's actually not close. And I don't fault anybody for what they believe. We're a very faithful state, especially out where I live.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think that that's kind of the underpinnings of their power.
It does feel like the Capitol is sort of like ground zero of protesting.
There's not a lot of good legislation that gets passed through that building, but there is bad legislation that gets blocked. Mm. And when the bad legislation gets blocked, it's almost always because enough people showed up to make their voices heard. I have yet to see a way to get the good stuff through yet. So,
right.
But you gotta start somewhere. I think a lot of Republicans, if you got them, you know, in a dark room with some truth serum, would tell you that they know they've gone too far in a lot of ways.
I caught up with Aaron to debrief on what we've been hearing on the ground from Democrats in Tennessee and to get ready for a conversation with one of the state's Republican voices.
Do you have FOMO?
I have so much FOMO.
You have no idea.
We missed you this week.
I know. I missed you too. Tell me what's going on over there.
The General Assembly in Tennessee has incredible amounts of power and they use it. We have not found a lot of Republicans that want to talk about it. We have found one, Jeremy Faison. He was elected as part of the Tea Party wave after Obama won. He won in 2010.
Why is he willing to talk to you? I mean,
because he's leaving.
There you go. Okay.
All right. Got it.
But now he's like, the party has just gone too far for me.
Welcome to God's country.
So you've been a representative for
16 years now. When I got elected, I was considered like this far right-wing Tea Party knuckle-dragging Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Turns out now that there's a good portion of my caucus who think I'm pretty moderate to liberal. Politics is definitely gotten more brutal. We're allowing some of the more extremes to set the tone. I heard that you interviewed my friend Justin.
Justin Pearson. Yeah. Representative Justin Pearson.
He is as far left as a human can be. I mean, he's like not mainstream America. But then we have people on my side that are doing everything they can to pull us further right and further right. And I'm like, that's not where America's at.
What made you decide like this was the year that you were like, okay, I've done enough?
Republicans introduced a bill that would allow schools to remove children who are here with parents illegally. I'm Christian, so like, I believe all these people are made in the image of God. So that bill didn't pass, thank goodness. But that's kind of where the mainstream GOP is at.
I know some conservatives are uneasy with the notion of race being mentioned at all.
I welcome the discussion.
In the Clay decision, the John Roberts argument is maybe the safeguards that were in the Voting Rights Act were necessary at one point in America, but they are not necessary anymore.
I always want to remind people, plenty of African Americans get elected all across America, and they don't have a super minority majority district to get elected. It's racist at its core to say, because you're this, then you get this. I just reject that as me as a daddy of a biracial child, me as a father-in-law of a black man. They rise or fall on who they are, not on the color they are.
Okay, so take race out of it. Why divide up Memphis?
Because it benefited our party. That's why you do that. I mean, you know the answer to that. You have done it in your party.
See, okay, but I mean, you may you may want to remove race from voting, but you all took the one predominantly black district in the predominantly black city in Tennessee and broke it up into three pieces, and the chance that a black person can win are very low now.
So I think that's racist, what you just said.
I'm looking at records. I'm looking at what the outcomes are. You know, that's what I just worry about it.
But what you're saying says nobody can get elected in Memphis if they're black. That's judging them by the color of their skin, Jennifer. That's not looking at the content of who they are or their character.
The former governor, Lamar Alexander, he warned about this. He said, one-party rule runs the risk of encouraging self-serving narrow interests. Do not, he was to warn, adopt Washington, D.C.'s bad manners.
He's right. If we're not careful, our party is going to continue to meddle with stuff that has nothing to do with anything, that is not what all of Tennessee cares about, and we'll lose our supermajority.
Mitch and I talked about my conversation with Representative Faison to try and make sense of what we'd heard across the state about its past and its present.
Republicans, some of them, want to believe that we are in a post-racial world. And you know what I think was
really— They are misguided.
this really bothers me, intimating that we are in a post-racial America now, that we've actually gotten past it. All you got to do is walk anywhere in the country and around the South to know that it may not be where it was before, but we're definitely not over it. Dr. King was assassinated not too far from here at the Lorraine Hotel.
People are still alive today that were alive, that people are still in the same fight today.
There is a consistency in how people who are not part of the mainstream are treated. And when you go over the edge, people start to go, well, actually, who is representing us and who is holding people accountable? And it starts to all build up. And so here's just a big question for the country. And I think the South is presaging this right now. How long will the people of America withstand being governed by a small minority of the people that don't reflect public views? How long will that tension last?
Joy despite the horrors that beat.
The people united will never be defeated.
From Left Right and Crooked Media, watch Longplay on YouTube at youtube.com/@longplayseries or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Episode 5, South Carolina, comes out next Monday.